question. How many people in this room work exclusively for an IT vendor? Raise your hand. Okay. How many in this room work exclusively inside a clinical laboratory or a pathology setting? Raise your hand. Okay. And then how many of you on either side of that table worked with SMACs way back when? Raise your hand. Okay, well, this is going to be relevant, and you'll see this in a minute. So I want to thank the gracious Bob McGonigal for a good introduction. And I have a lot of things to share with you this morning. That mischief maker, Dr. Bruce Friedman, assigned me this great topic of why IVDs are competing with software firms. And it's one that I've been puzzling over for several months as to how to get the right handle on it. So what I'd like to do is see if we can end up with four objectives today. Let's look at the definitions of middleware, because I can tell you in the last 3 or 4 months, I've had all sorts of people parse that word in a way that suits their perspective. Second thing, I'd like to share with you a quick summary of what I see as the primary drivers of change in the American healthcare system today, because this is directly relevant to item 3, which is how laboratories today are using IT, and it reflects much of what those of you who participated this morning have heard. And then 4, against that background and context, let's look at what the IVD strategies and opportunities are. So without further ado, I'm going to go pretty quick because I do have a lot of material. Where's the good place to get a definition of anything? Start with the web and start with Google and put in middleware, and the top entry was Wikipedia. Now, most of you who are tech savvy know Wikipedia is the encyclopedia that the users log on and add their own definitions and information. And here's what Wikipedia said. Middleware. In computing, middleware consists of software agents acting as an intermediary between different application components. It is used most often to support complex distributed applications. The software agents involved may be one of or many. And then there was another paragraph here. Middleware is now used to describe database management systems, web servers, application servers, content management systems, and similar tools that support the application development and delivery process. Middleware is especially integral to modern information based on XML, SOAP, web services, and service-oriented architecture. Clearly, the Wikipedia contributor there is very technical in the software world. So here was another listing, just a couple below, freedictionary.com. Software that functions as a conversion or translation layer. It is also a consolidator and an integrator. Custom-programmed middleware solutions have been developed for decades to enable one application to communicate with another that either runs on a different platform or comes from a different vendor or both. Today, there is a diverse group, probably of products that offer packaged middleware solutions as outlined in the following examples. Then, here's a real simple one on answers.com. Software that serves as an intermediary between system software and an application. And then because if some of you are very technical and have to deal with those computer engineers, I thought you'd like to see how Kenneth Klingenstein weighs in on this. And I'm going to read this because the takeaway is at the bottom. The term middleware is defined by one's point of view. Many interesting categorizations exist, all centered around sets of tools and data that help applications use networked resources and services. Some tools, such as authentication and directories, are in all definitions of middleware. Other services, such as co-scheduling of networked resources, secure multicast, object brokering, and messaging, are of particular interests of certain communities, such as scientific researchers or business system vendors. This breadth of meaning, my italics, is reflected in the following working definition. Middleware is the intersection of the stuff that network engineers don't want to do with the stuff that application developers don't want to do. I can tell by your laughter that that resonates. So middleware gets defined in a lot of different ways, but I think everyone in this room would agree it's a piece of software that's going to connect one thing to another. whatever lies on each ends of the connections. Some of you may see Healthcare Informatics magazine, and I wanted to set up my remarks by presenting their February issue, which every year has their tech trends in healthcare. These are 9 trends, and I've added the check marks as to those trends where you could argue that laboratory test data and that results database is going to figure in these kinds of trends. And without question, all 9 boxes get checked. To talk about the healthcare system, I want to slim down all the various things you see here and read and share with you that I think that we can distill it into maybe 4 key drivers in the marketplace right now. The first driver, which is yet to be seen in its full force, are consumers as the primary buyer of their health care. And this will happen in both the private side as well as Medicare and Medicaid. A comment. The governor of Florida has gotten legislation passed that essentially create HSA types of programs and Medicaid vouchers in demonstration projects in certain counties. So their objective is to turn even the Medicaid beneficiary into an informed consumer and let them spend their dollars. The second thing, as everyone in this room is well aware, there is a major commitment guided at the federal level to create a universal electronic medical record in the American healthcare system with a target of accomplishing this in 10 years from George Bush's announcement last spring. Number 3, it's all that technology that's pouring into healthcare, molecular, genetic, a variety of technology sciences and things that in the lab world give you tools in IT, software, automation systems, as well as new diagnostic tests. Then the 4th, and this should not be underestimated, we are beginning to see the first expansion on a wider scale of Deming, W. Edwards Deming-based quality management methods into healthcare generally and specifically the laboratory medicine profession. That's ranging from the ISO 9000 programs to Lean Six Sigma and other flavors. So I'd like to spend a couple minutes on each of these 4 trends to give you a fuller expression of them. Consumer-directed health plans. Between 2000 and 2005, the cost to employers of health benefits increased at double digits in each year. That means that if my company was paying $1 billion in benefits in 2000, by the end of 2004 and into 2005, I was probably paying $2 billion. Employers have become a direct force in changing the American healthcare system because they cannot afford the healthcare bill. HSAs are going to be the primary driver in this particular trend. The Medicare bill that enabled Part D pharmacy plans also expanded use of health savings accounts. And here's your takeaway number. In the 10 months between March 2005 and the end of January, the number of people enrolled in HSAs went from 1 million to 3 million. And this is happening very fast in certain cities where employers are adopting HSA plans. And I put down here HSA growth is the metric. You watch that. McKinsey and Company predicts that HSAs and consumer-directed health plans will be the single most impactive thing to the American healthcare system since the introduction of HMOs in the mid-80s. So, point. As consumers become buyers, they have higher expectations for accessing healthcare services, whether it's getting an appointment with the doctor, having referrals to the doctors they believe are the caliber and quality they want to see, or ancillary services, radiology, lab, etc. So it's a warning for laboratories. You'd better look at how customer-friendly you are. As buyers, consumers also want rapid access to the information, to the medical records, to their test results, email consults with docs. This year, actually, in November, I switched to an HSA for my own coverage with Humana. Every single document I interacted with Humana was done electronically, sent to me as a PDF, verified by me electronically. And the only thing I got in the mail was my HSA card from Chase Bank, which says Visa on it, by the way, and that typical card you give the doc to say, oh, you're enrolled in a program. So this paperless shift and use of the Internet is happening rapidly. Drive to our universal EMR. I mentioned the federal government's role in this. And by the way, the Veterans Administration has made great strides, and we've reported in the last 6 years about how the U.S. military infrastructure is using LOINC to line up the test results in the various military hospitals to create a universal medical record that would follow a serviceman and a dependent anywhere in the world. So although the VA has had some problems trying to aggregate data across the VISNs, inside each regional VA system, they've got a fairly complete and useful integrated health record. So what's happening in the hospital side is what was referenced in this morning's session. Hospitals are looking at how to make a single-page view out of the pharmacy repository, the clinical lab repository, the radiology depository, et al. And in that context, integrating IT resources within the enterprise is soaking up a lot of the money that hospitals and health systems pay for IT services. That means, and one other dimension to this, most of you know that digitizing radiology has been a very fast-moving field over the last 6 to 8 years, but it's also a big drain on IT dollars within the hospital. So where this all goes is, I like to say, follow the money. And in the hospital world, if the hospitals are spending more money to integrate the IT systems they already have, then it's not surprising that your major healthcare vendors have begun to reorient their service and product mix to meet the needs of their primary customers. So that means they're putting fewer resources into upgrading core LIS offerings, radiology offerings, pharmacy offerings, etc. And rather, they're looking to sell the customers what the customers want to buy, which is how do I get all of these existing systems to integrate? And Jacques' comment this morning was very interesting. I'd never thought of this dimension, that you have what today is now a 10-hospital system, and maybe 5 hospitals had done the best of breed, so they've got a variety of clinical database repositories from different sources, and the other 5 may have gone all single vendor. They're an all Meditech like HCA or an all Cerner, McKesson, et cetera. So then I would suggest what you are seeing over the last 6 to 7 years is a self-reinforcing loop specifically in lab information systems. Since the latest generation LIS products have less added functionality over the existing one in the lab, then the labs have less motivation to pester the hospital administration to set aside the money for them to upgrade. This is all very consistent with following where the money's going. The second thing is labs don't have the dollars for major IT upgrades. We've got probably year 16 to 17 of a significant revenue squeeze just out of the Medicare program on Part B lab testing reimbursement. And then the payers have done even a more radical job of trimming reimbursement. So I would suggest to you that after close to 15 to 20 years of sustained relative cuts in lab reimbursement, you now have arrived at the point where the typical lab administrator and pathologist has the pressure of these economics pushing upon them, and it makes them willing not only to take direct action, but to look for solutions that may be outside the lab industry and outside healthcare. That's a positive thing for our industry because here's just a quick list of the what I call the new test technology dilemma. The clinicians want the new tests that are clinically relevant. Molecular technologies in particular increase the complexity of running a laboratory. So it makes the management of that lab even more difficult to do well. And then we all know that molecular testing has the capability to just flow scads of data out and into data repositories. And I've talked to a number of folks who believe that the time's not far away when classic LIS products may be overwhelmed by the amount of molecular data that should be flowing into those repositories. I would also suggest to you at the same time we look at molecular and other in vitro diagnostic assays coming into the market, that labs face a whole variety of automation options that didn't exist 6 and 8 years ago. And many of these are particularly process-oriented or task-targeted. So they're available to do a specific piece of that pre-analytical, analytical, post-analytical workflow. Going to quality management. The thing for you to understand is that when any organization adopts a quality-based mindset, it's a whole new management ballgame. It's no longer top-down, makes all the decisions, and if we have good leaders, we do well. It's really a bottom-up. The people closest to the work are empowered, there's that famous word from the 80s, to make the changes to the system. And so whatever you call the flavor, ISO 9000, Lean Six Sigma, TQM, CQI, the emphasis shifts to looking at your work processes, to design processes that can only deliver the desired outcome, minimize waste, and minimize dead time for product from raw material to finished results. And I would suggest to you that it requires people working in the laboratory to now think holistically about the whole organization and break it down to its component parts in a way that serves the overall mission. I would also suggest to you that quality systems makes laboratories an entirely different kind of customer for both IVD vendors and IT vendors. And here's why. In a quality management-minded laboratory, they measure everything. And they use those measurements to drive improvements. So whether it's workflow redesign, moving to a single piece or small batch processing, they need to intervene in real time in a work process that might be delivering errors so they can fix that. All of this mandates that the labs have real-time information that's accurate. And I would suggest to you that hospital labs with outreach programs have this IT need in actually two dimensions. One is the inpatient, outpatient, internally, and the other is external. And I've got a few things to talk about that. So let's begin to take this healthcare trend piece and pull it together into the laboratory world. I think that what we've just looked at are key factors in driving labs' demand for IT solutions. And it's been discussed from this podium today that there are fewer sales of upgrade LIS products today relative to 6, 8 years ago. And I think that you have three items that reflect what labs need from IT and what the traditional sources of LIS products have not quite delivered. They need solutions that improve their lab operations, that will allow them to move lab information, whether it's operational internally or lab test results externally around to different users, and that also supports their ability to do more work with fewer med techs. Technology is always a wild card. What's disruptive out there? I think that it's instructive for us to look at one of the keenest management minds of the 20th century, Peter Drucker, and he pointed out about 1980, he wrote this in one of his books, that it takes about 40 years from the time there's a fundamental scientific breakthrough and a widespread application of that in a society. And if you go back and you look, DNA was discovered in 1953. And when did molecular tests really start to play out? You know, PCR as an enabler emerged in the late 80s. The decade of the 90s has seen a lot of genetic-based, DNA-based kinds of assays move in. to clinical use. The transistor was 1952, and the transistor is at the core of all our chips and our chipsets. And you think it was the 1980s when personal computers began to ramp up. And then the laser, 1958. What do we use lasers for in today's society? You know, everything from barcoding at the grocery store into a variety of lab instrument systems. So I would suggest to you that a whole variety of these things in the field of computing gives laboratories a different technology capability, and that we are seeing because of this, and we are in the information age, right? We've left the industrial age. And so you now have the ability, because of all these computer systems and docs offices, as I whiz through the turnpike and my speedy pass automatically clicks and charges my credit card, these kinds of things were impossible to do 20 years ago. Just out of curiosity, is there anybody who's not seen the inside of their bank branch in 90 days? Raise your hands. Okay? Is that a paradigm shift? Because you have real-time access on the web to what's going on in your bank account. Okay? So then I would suggest to you that it is not a coincidence that in the last 4 or 5 years, we have seen a succession of drugs where negative findings about these drugs and their side effects have caused the FDA and the manufacturer to pull them off the market and triggered a variety of lawsuits. We didn't see this in the 70s and 80s, did we? But I would suggest to you that the system's ability to capture this data in closer to real time is now allowing the system to respond to that information. So let's go through a quick checklist of what your laboratory customers need in the way of IT capabilities. If there's a shortage of labor, the lab needs an automation solution where relevant to replace manual processes. As it's turned out, the marketplace in lab automation has pretty much said TLA is not the solution. It's rather task-targeted, workstation consolidation kinds of solutions. But on the IT side, when you automate, you also need a software capability to guide the automation and to guide the tubes and to guide the operators. With the introduction of TLA in the mid-90s, it's been observed to me by many of you lab users that you've been frustrated at the laboratory automation software systems that are available to support that. That's a frustration. And so I would suggest to you this bottom bullet. There's a very large unrealized potential that motivates labs to look for middleware solutions because they have the hardware, but the hardware doesn't deliver everything they believe it's capable of. Here's another internal need, rules engines. Okay? The idea is to use a computerized process to replace a manual review and routine decisions, so that the med techs can focus on what the exceptions are. So the solution for these hospital labs is where do we find applications that we can implement on a rather speedy basis from decision to operation, and they won't be overly expensive, and they will be functional in a variety of connections, whether it's between instruments, the automated systems themselves, and the LIS. Hospital needs. Referenced again this morning, how do we collect and aggregate data from any site where lab testing is conducted? And I put up here Geisinger, and it's a very interesting example because the solution for hospital labs is a software application that probably sits between the actual test site and the central LIS to aggregate. And this happened about 4 to 5 years ago. Geisinger made a conscious decision that they would capture every lab test performed within their integrated health system, whether it was done point of care, physician's office lab, or core lab. And they realized that a solution to that was to actually create a standalone personal computer box and feed all of the remote site lab test data into that, where it was aggregated and filtered and then added to the LIS. So this is an example of initiative at the lab level to use software to meet a need. So then hospitals' needs again. How do we get lab test data to all the appropriate users, regardless of where they may be working, and regardless of how they would access the enterprise LAN? And then the solution out of this was, is there applications we can use that will pull data from the LIS and then transmit that along? In some case, you're having lab test alerts pulled out and sent along, clinical decision support systems such as WizOrder at the University of Vanderbilt University Medical Center, and then, of course, you know, wireless devices are multiplying all through hospitals, and they'd love to have lab test results go into those little items. So if I wrap this piece up, hospital laboratories want solutions that they can put into play quickly, that are reasonably priced for the benefit, and that they know can be upgraded and adapted at a relatively moderate cost as appropriate. External, I don't need to talk much about this slide. The takeaway here is in the last 7 or 8 years, hospital administrators themselves have recognized that outreach can be a very good tool to help hospital labs cut their average cost per test and generate profits, in particularly because the lab is used during the second shift when it's normally empty. So over the last 7 years, you've seen the number of hospital labs that do some form of active outreach increase steadily. And in many cases, as a hospital inpatient-focused lab, the LIS solution that was acquired and put in place didn't have outreach capabilities. So that's where middleware has filled a gap. And time to implement and cost to implement coming from the major big IT vendors was not competitive, for reasons I mentioned earlier, for a lot of the specialized providers. And that's why labs were motivated to look to third-party sources for these kinds of solutions. Here's a list of what a typical hospital outreach program would need to do that would involve a software capability. So here's the dilemma. If your hospital lab is operating internally and externally, it has business needs that cannot be met by most installed LIS products. So where have these customers turned over the last few years? Middleware. And I would suggest to you that all of this is compelling evidence that laboratory middleware is a customer-driven phenomenon. And I put down at the bottom here, pull versus push market. You ever wonder why all the car dealers are always on the radio and TV? They're in a push business. Detroit wants to run those factories 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, to get the lowest economies of scale on every automobile produced. So they keep shipping cars to the dealers, whether the dealers have customers for them or not. This is a push model. And I would suggest to you that laboratories are now in a pull model. They're coming back to the IT vendors and saying, give us this, give us that. Did Napster fill an unmet demand in the marketplace? So in a sense, you had consumers with a pull demand that was unmet. And when Napster said, you don't have to pay $20 for a CD with 12 songs of which you only want two, you can actually go get it for free from one of your college buddies. Napster exploded. And you know what happened to recording industry revenues 2001, 2002, 2003. I mean, they dropped 20 to 30% for some of these labels. So where do you get middleware if you're a laboratory? I think that you'll hear, besides this morning, over the next couple of days, it's not going to be your big IT traditional vendor that will serve the needs of hospital labs for specific IT solutions to specific applications. It's actually an emerging group of vendors, and some have been in the middleware business for almost 2 decades in the United States. Some are going to come to you from Europe. And I put down here the 1998 to 2002 period. It's a great example of web browser-based lab test ordering and results reporting companies. And we saw this whole class emerge independent of the Cerners, Meditechs, SMS, Sunquest, now Mises, McKesson's, etc. Atlas is one of those. Abiton.com, remember that company? CareEvolve, LabTest.com. There was a LabDat.com. These are essentially middleware vendors, aren't they? Because they're connecting the LIS with a lab user. So let's turn to the IVD manufacturers, because that's the real theme of what we're discussing. Are they going to compete with big healthcare IT? I would suggest to you that IVD firms have their own dilemma, and it's fundamental to their business model, believe it or not. I've got a question for you in this room. What is the primary product that's produced by every clinical lab in the world? See, you guys are in the information business. You got it right. There's your A for today. Bruce Friedman has those little gold stars to put on your forehead as you leave the meeting this afternoon. Okay, but it's that simple. Labs produce information. So, the business opportunity for labs and their vendors, how do you boost the value of lab information to users of lab test data? And I would suggest to you that in the healthcare world we are evolving toward rapidly, your definition of user needs to include not just the referring doctor, but the patients themselves, the payers, even the employers have need for certain data sets, probably blinded, disease management programs, but also policymakers. This is something that I introduced at the 2002 War College, which caught a lot of people's attention because it framed the problem of the two blood brothers in a very dramatic way. And I call it the Nike sports shoe paradox. You know those Air Jordans? We don't see Air Jordans much anymore, do we? Because he retired. But Nike sells those shoes at about $120 a pair. How much does Nike pay for those shoes? $5 a pair from a subcontract manufacturer in places like Malaysia, Vietnam, etc. By the way, over the last 25 years, the country of lowest cost has rotated. It went from Taiwan over to another country, and I think Vietnam is where a lot of these vendors are located now. So the point I want to make is that the market, which part of the Nike sports shoe business do you want to be in? Do you want to make the shoes for $5? Or do you want to be in this value-added piece where you're the brains that engineer the shoes, do the design, you sell it, you market it? So where is the value? The value is not in creating the lab test result. It's what someone does with the information. And so I would suggest to you that the traditional model of the commercial clinical lab company, like the Quests and the LabCorps, is that they spend 95% of all their time, their management resources, and their money manufacturing sports shoes at $5 per pair. And I put down here, what's the reimbursement for routine chemistry and hematology? Particularly if you have a capitated contract with a national insurance company. So the problem is for Quest and for LabCorp and for every clinical lab and the IVD companies is how do you get to the value-added piece where you can make that $120 for a pair of sports shoes, not the $5. And so in the lab world, it's going to be to convert that into useful clinical knowledge and help the clinicians apply that knowledge to the benefit of the patient and the system. And I've noted down here Myriad Genetics with their BRCA gene test and Genomic Health. They both, Genomic Health is predictive of, it's a genetic test to predict the recurrence of breast cancer. Both of these panels are about $3,000. And Genomic Health began offering its test about a year and a half to 2 years ago. It's done 3,000 tests, and Medicare, as of February, I believe it was February 17th this last month, began covering for this test. So now if you're in the lab business, do you want to be doing routine chemistry and hematology, or would you like to be doing this molecular kind of test which has high value to the system? So to borrow a phrase that I heard from Professor Friedman not too many months ago, the sweet spot. It's a reminder that sweet spot describes the perfect place to be. So for IVD firms, as suppliers of instruments and reagents, in one sense, IVD firms are actually providing the raw materials to the contractor who fabricates the Nike sports shoe. And in that sense, the IVD vendors are selling commodity products to which labs try and negotiate the lowest price. Thus, if I'm in the IVD business, the sweet spot for me is how to take my reagent and instrument mix and move higher up the value chain for the labs and their end users so that I can capture more of that sports shoe $120. I would suggest to you that the IVD industry is moving along two strategies to increase their value proposition. And so one strategy is to offer lab customers management consulting and operational consulting expertise. Probably most of you know one of the first companies to just come out and make a statement in the market was Ortho Clinical Diagnostics about 4 or 5 years ago. They said, we'll introduce and you pay us for a consulting service to put Lean Six Sigma into your laboratory. You can find comparable management, consulting divisions, departments, resources with all of the major IVD companies. And it's because they already have this expertise and they've now learned that you need it. And why do you need it? You need it because you're trying to get along with fewer resources, fewer med techs, and you're looking at things like automation and operational improvements. Now, the second strategy is offering lab customers software capabilities that add value for the laboratory itself, and even possibly for the referring clinicians. Now, I put Sysmex and Molus in here for an interesting reason. A lot of people in the lab business, what was it, 4 to 5 years ago when Sysmex announced that they had bought an LIS company, said, well, what's going on here? And even I asked that question, although I also recognized that there was something significant behind that market event, that there was a corporate strategy of the juice and box business married to the information technology business. And I'm going to explain that in a minute. So, I would suggest to you, the needs of laboratories now intersect with the strategic interests of in vitro diagnostic manufacturers. Why are they going into middleware? Because their customers are asking for middleware solutions. The customers are pulling the market to them. It's not being pushed by somebody who says, hey, I got a solution. Do you have the problem? I'll sell you the solution. It's people saying, I have a problem. Do you have a solution? And remember, this is going to drive things for the next several years. So for IVD firms, if they have a solution to the customer problem, then they have a value added that goes beyond simply what the instrument and the reagent contributes to the lab's success. How does middleware evolve from where we are today? I would suggest to you that Europe offers plenty of hints, and this is a rare turnaround in terms of lab management and lab capabilities, because North America has often been in the forefront of operational changes in the structure and form of clinical laboratories. In Europe, IVD firms have a long history of being both an instrument reagent and IT resource for laboratories. And there's a very simple reason. When automated instruments emerged in the 1980s, European laboratories, mostly funded by government health programs, had level budgets. So they had no budget to buy an IT solution. And in order for someone to sell their SMAC and get maximum value for the lab, they had to help with the IT piece. Now, do you know why I asked about the SMAC? Because remember what existed for an LIS back when the SMACs came out, right? Was there a lot of key punching of data before all the software connections started to develop and hit the market? Okay, so here's something that's very interesting. In Europe, the in vitro diagnostic firms were selling boxes and the juice and helping labs develop their IT capability to make maximum advantage of those automated solutions. So I would suggest to you that because of this zero budget for the new technology factor in Europe, we did see the emergence in the United States of a business class that doesn't exist over there, which is the single IT firm that offers an integrated menu of products. And in that class are obviously the Cerners, McKessons, Meditechs, SMS, Mises. That's a whole, you know who all those names are. In the United States, there was a way for the system to carve some money out and pay for an IT solution. In Europe, it didn't exist. So in Europe, you found the IVD vendors being a major resource at helping labs get the software they needed to get the maximum bang out of the automation and the instrument systems they were buying. So the other thing is, because business strategies in the same IVD firm were often different in the U.S. versus Europe, I would suggest that you've had very little cross-fertilization between the same within the same company between the different business units. So now, let's go back to Sysmex. Around the year 2000, Sysmex began to actually got two new leaders that have run Sysmex US ever since then. They both came from Europe. And I would suggest to you one dimension of the Sysmex-Molus connection is that these two individuals had long experience with IVD as a software resource in support of the box and the juice. And the rest of the IVD industry has all of these same resources, by the way. They just haven't paid as close attention to them in the United States operation. So now let's tie it all together. I have limited amount of time, and I think you'd like to get the version. And, of course, you know, we get to do our little pun here with let's tie it all together. Main drivers in the healthcare system. I want to remind you, consumers are about to come front and center. The drive to universal EMR, the need to adapt and implement new technology, and then this whole quality management philosophy and movement. So, I would suggest to you that the business priority of the largest IT vendors in the United States is to support IT integration in their biggest customers, which means that their IT product creates a vacuum of functionality for their existing LIS customers. And it's that vacuum of functionality that has created the middleware attention that you in this room are here to learn about. Labs have unmet needs. They're turning to targeted automation solutions. You know, the big seller in the last few years has been the pre-analytical units that do all the sorting and the aliquoting and the centrifuging, etc. They need software products to maximize the potential of that. So I would suggest to you that laboratories, under pressure to cut costs while they improve their productivity, are always willing buyers of a reasonably priced, workable solution to those problems in the lab. And thus, you've seen over the last 4 or 5 years a growing number of middleware options that you can buy from a variety of suppliers. Not surprising, the in vitro diagnostic manufacturers who are in labs every day saying, what's your problem, how can I solve it, have recognized this opportunity. And so they have begun to fill the vacuum that has come to play from the LIS systems, the legacy LIS systems that can't do what labs need them to do today. That's where you're getting the middleware solutions that are coming out of the IVD companies. So it's a natural evolution for IVD to come into this marketplace because it goes back to what labs produce as a product. It's information. It's the complete Air Jordan for $120 that's marketed out there, advertised, designed to meet current tastes, refined to meet changing tastes. Laboratories have that same thing going on. I suspect that you're going to see lots of competition for middleware, and it's going to be an interesting battle between two primary players, the IVD manufacturers and specialized middleware vendors. But also, I think that over time, as the IT integration cycle waves through the hospitals, then the big IT companies are probably going to drop back and backfill into the middleware market. follow the money. And when the money starts coming back into that arena, those vendors will follow it. I believe that the sophistication of all of this is going to grow radically. And I would suggest to you a key insight. This game is now shifting away from the single LIS that does all and bees all into a multiplicity of software applications that collectively do the job. Interesting insight from this morning. Labs prefer to deal with as few different IT suppliers as possible. So we might see some very interesting broad menus offered by the leaders in this. Okay, I'd like to also make a prediction about LIS. And I think that the classic LIS that we've always known and loved for probably the last 20 years is a dinosaur on its way to extinction. And that may happen in as little as 5 years. And let me tell you why. We already have hospital labs of 200 and 300 beds operating without LIS. Why? Because the instrument functionalities have expanded. And when you have the universal EMR, which will become the primary dump for the information the lab produces that should be seen by the doctor, then you've eliminated one of the main factors that caused LIS to come into existence in the first place, which was to gather data from a disparate set of instruments and manual tests on the bench, put it in a consistent form so they could create a single report or a single page view. Now, along this line, I think that laboratory data repositories will always be there, but they're not going to look like the classic LIS. They're going to be something very different because they're going to be taking in molecular data, they're going to be taking in other lab test data, and they're probably going to be massaging it with smart software products to come up with useful knowledge. And so with that, I think I've expired with my time, and I'd like to thank you for being an attentive audience. And I'll give it back to our moderator.